friendship has been and continues to be a hot topic in the American press and throughout the rest of the media. I think in part because although our nation is highly populated and although we have many contacts, many times we find ourselves to be in isolation. That is, we really don't have very many friends at all. Richard Farson is a professor in San Francisco, makes what I consider to be a startling statement. He says that millions of people in America have never had 1 minute in their whole lifetime where they could let down and share with another person their deeper feelings. And so whole books have been written about the topic of friendship, more recently especially about the so-called friendless American male, contending by some estimates that only about 10% of American men ever have a real friendship. Now, this is not a simple subject. You might think it would be, that if you want to have friends, then just be a friend. If you want a friend, go out and find one and, you know, just go do it. Except many people do not have the skills to go do it or do not have the opportunities. Many people define friendship differently one from another. In fact, there's some controversy that takes place saying that perhaps the female definition of friendship is quite different from the male definition of friendship, and that's why we men are said to have no friends, because we're operating off a female definition. If we can get our definitions right, we'd have lots of friends. And there are some people who are, it seems, functioning with a surplus of friendships, and there are other people who really try and never seem to be able to come up with a friend at all. This morning, we undertake the beginning of what will be an extended Sunday morning series examining friendships in the Bible. And of course, the idea is that we understand something of our own friendships, both with God and with one another. Friendships that extend from Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden to David and Jonathan. Extraordinary friendships that, in their case, are set up as an example maybe of the closest of male friendships in all of history. The friendship of Ruth and Naomi, a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, who were bound together as friends by their common dilemmas of widowhood. Or in the New Testament of Paul and Timothy, a mentor and an apprentice, or Priscilla and Aquila, a wife and a husband. We begin our series sort of priming the pump this morning, introductory by nature, that which is said, but based upon the proposition that friendship is a divine gift, a gift that God has given to us of belonging to one another. So we take a look at it first from the divine side and then from the human side, understanding initially the divine design of friendship, which I think is pretty much brought together in a single word. And that is the Old Testament word, likeness. In the creation story, on really the first page of the creation story, in Genesis 1:26, we hear God quoted using the plural pronoun, saying, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness." Theologians teach that that is the first biblical reference to the biblical doctrine of the Trinity. That God is one God, but in three persons, Father and Son and Holy Spirit. Let us make humankind in our image, in our likeness. While we, in our limited understanding of God, cannot come up with the words to fully describe who and what He is, we do see that as separate persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, share a fellowship. A friendship together, a bond that is at the very nature of who God is, and that God, in creating us in His image, in His likeness, gave to us that similar need that is essential to who God is, of our also having fellowship or having friendship. That if we are to be like God, then we are to share that kind of relationship with God and with one another. Turning a page in the Old Testament, still in the creation story, in Genesis 2:18, again, God is quoted, this time saying, "It is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." We most often hear that verse quoted in reference to marriage, and in the creation story, the subsequent creation of Eve. But we need to remember that the basic premise of that statement of God is that it is not good for man to be alone. because man created in the image of God was never intended to be alone. Aloneness is not part of the initial design. In fact, contrary to creation, humans were designed to be together. That togetherness, of course, may take any one of a number of expressions. It may be in marriage that we come together, or in a family, the nuclear family, the basis of all of society. Or it may be that we are together in community, or we are together in church, or we are together in business, or we are together in crisis. People sometimes in war or in sickness come together in a way that they would not otherwise, but it is part of God's initial creation and continuing likeness within us that we come together. That means, then, that much of the Bible can be understood theologically in terms of that friendship or that coming together, whether it be Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden or the Old Testament nation of Israel as they are together in their building to huge numbers and traveling out of captivity into the promised land and all that they face together, or the New Testament church together, or the biblical teachings concerning marriage and family and friendships and business and all of those things together. Friendship. Friendship that is God's gift of belonging to one another in order that we become all that God intended us and created us to be. Now, none of that is to say that we, when alone and without friends, are also without God. For we must remember that, again, in the creation story, that Adam was, first of all, without Eve, and he was alone and fully human. But that God quickly changed that, recognizing that that was not his primary design. Likeness. Friendship. The Bible's teaching is not limited to creation. In fact, there's a great deal more that is said about friendship throughout the Bible, even independent of the stories that are told. Several of those teachings are in the book of Proverbs, which we studied earlier this summer. Let me give you just three examples and then one final example from the New Testament. In Proverbs 18:24, we are told that a man of many companions, that's having lots of people that we know, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Surveys indicate that the average American knows from 500 to 2,500 acquaintances. And yet here we are told that a man of many companions may come to ruin, that actually having a long list of acquaintances can be counterproductive if there is a lack of that one or two or three special friendships. There is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. You may say, that's not hard in my case because I don't like my brother and we don't get along very well at all, or I've always sort of been at odds with my sister. But the assumption here is that in the family relationship, there is something that is quite different in closeness of necessity than is ordinarily found in the rest of society. But there is a possibility of a close friendship between two individuals which is even stronger than family ties, and extends to be something quite different from the superficial type of relationships that we have in acquaintances. A genuine friend may be an exception, someone very close, someone that is closer than a brother or a sister. Then in Proverbs 17:17, we are told that a friend loves at all times, all seasons of life. A friend is someone who will stick close by you when you are soaring to extraordinary success, but will not abandon you when you fall off the pinnacle of that success into the tough times of life. A friend is someone who will be a friend if you have money or if you are broke, if you are in the picture of health or if you are on your deathbed from some terrible disease. A friend loves at all times. Proverbs 27:6 says that wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Interesting contrast. Saying that an enemy may be someone who will just load you up with flattery and all the things that he or she wants you to hear, but the truth may be that it is controlling and manipulative. That the enemy is simply saying those kind and nice things for her purposes or for his purposes, but by contrast, the wounds of a friend can be trusted. I have long contended that we can take just about any criticism from someone whom we know to love us dearly. Someone who is genuinely a friend can wound us for our benefit, and we will take it. I know that there are friends whom I can and have counted upon to tell it to me straight. When there have been times in life when I have had my vision fogged by circumstances, when I'm not sure if I'm a success or a failure, when I really don't know whether to listen to the things that I'm hearing other people say or that I see in my own mirror, but that I can get together with them or I can call them on the telephone and I can say, this is the way it is, tell me what I need to hear. And if need be, they will wound me because they are good enough friends to do that. And if need be, they will bandage up my wounds because they are not only the ones who are my friends in the tough times, but also at all times. But I suppose the greatest of all the Bible verses that talk about friendship is found in John 15:13, a conversation that took place between Jesus and his disciples as they walked daily back and forth between Jerusalem and Bethany, nearing the time of his crucifixion. It was then one day that Jesus turned to his disciples and said, "Greater love has no one than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." That has got to be the ultimate definition of friendship. You hear a verse like that and you begin to think to yourself, who would die for me? If it came because of some bizarre change in our political circumstances that we were invaded by an outside force and a certain number of us were to be executed, who would stand in your place? I mean, who could you call up and say, what are you doing today? And would you be willing to die for me? Or how long a list do we have of those for whom we would be willing to die? Most of us would have a very, very short list. Wouldn't have to write it down, because there are not very many people, if any, for whom we would be willing to give up life. That is a pressing, if not a painful, definition of friendship. And yet, while the verse applies to our friendships with one another, its primary teaching had to do with Jesus' friendship of us, because in that very same chapter, John 15, we are told that he calls us his friends, and that he not only was willing, but that he did die on our behalf. That's why when he says that he wants to be best friends with us, he's already demonstrated the power of the friendship that he has towards us and calls us to be best friends with him. Maybe you've already guessed that I'm reluctant to give a simple definition of friendship. That's because I think it's very complex. Friendship varies from relationship to relationship. It incorporates all the things that these four Bible verses say, and more, much more. Friendship, I guess I describe it if I can't define it. Friendship is a relationship between two people that includes loving, includes loyalty, it includes durability, it includes mutual interest. But that's too long a definition to be remembered. Friendship is simply belonging. It's belonging to one another. It's one person belonging to another, and another to the one. And it is a very special gift from God, the divine gift of belonging to one another. Now, if that be the divine design, how do we look at it from our side? Let me tell you that a great deal of research has been done about this. You can get the articles and everything from Time to Newsweek to Good Housekeeping to Psychology Today, or go to B. Dalton or Walden Books and pick up a whole list of titles out of the section on friendship. We know from our own experience and from research that most people have very few friends. In fact, many people, a very large number of people, have no truly close friends at all. Those with whom they can share the innermost thoughts of their minds and feelings of their hearts. And especially men, that men are even less likely to have friends, close friends, than women. Researchers give all kinds of possible explanations of that. They say that from early boyhood, we are taught to compete with other males, and that that kind of competition precludes friendship. You cannot trust someone who is your competition. There are others who say that we have such a great fear of homosexuality and of accusations of being homosexual that As men, we keep our distance from other men, lest our own fears somehow come to the surface, or perhaps the accusation of others. Still other explanations include that we lack models, that boys have grown up in homes where they never saw their father have a close friend. They've gone into businesses where the boss never seems to have anyone that he is particularly close to. And so all through life, there is no example that is there to be followed. Research shows that friendships are far more important to women than they are to men. But in any case, they are very, very complex. They seem to defy simple formulas. Friendships take a long time to develop. They take a great deal of energy. They take a great deal of work to maintain. You don't just stumble upon a friendship and then have it last for all of a lifetime. You have to service that friendship if you want it to endure. Friendships, we are told, and we know this from experience, are usually, almost always, between two individuals, two persons in a friendship, and it is rare and it is difficult to have a third or a fourth. That most shows up in the rarity of close friendships between couples. For when two people have a friendship, there is only one relationship to develop and to maintain. But when there are four people involved, the number of relationships multiplies to six. For there is not only the relationship between this husband and wife and this husband and wife, that's two, not only the relationship between the two men, that's three, the relationship between the two women, that's four, but also the relationship between this husband and this wife and this husband and this wife. So there are actually six relationships that need to develop and be maintained, and then there is the complexity of how they all relate to one another. That's why group friendships are very unusual. When groups seem to be friends together, usually it is two friends and two friends and two friends and two friends, all of whom have come together in a group, but the real friendships are between the pairs rather than the entire group together. We know that some people develop friendships more easily than others. There are those who seem, we would think, to have the personality for it, except personality seems to have nothing to do with it. There are those who are extroverts, very outgoing, who have no friends at all, and there are extroverts who have a number of friends. There are introverts who have no friends, and there are introverts who have a number of friends. It seems that it is based upon a combination of skill, of desire, and of circumstance, and that virtually anyone can have a friend and be a friend. But just choosing to be a friend is not all there is to it, for we cannot impose our friendships upon other people. There must be a mutuality to it. I know that from experience, and probably you do as well. There have been times when I have chosen someone to be my friend who didn't choose me in return, and the friendship never developed. I've also sensed at times that someone has said, "I want to be your friend," but I didn't feel comfortable with that relationship. And while I want to be friendly and while I certainly will maintain an acquaintance, I don't sense the reciprocity, and so I suppose I have turned off that kind of a relationship. A mutual interest must be present in order for that mutual friendship to be developed. But that is not to say that all friendships are necessarily equal. In fact, most are not. A lot of research has been done with what seems to be a tricky question that has an obvious answer. And that is, you come to me and say to me, "Who is your best friend?" And I give to you a name. But when the complete survey is done and comparisons are made, and the person whom I name to be my best friend is asked who his or her best friend is, the answer often is not me back again, but some third person. And when we go through a social grouping like that which we are together here, we discover that there is an ongoing list, and many people do not reciprocally name the other person as the best friend. In any of those cases still, it takes initiative in order to have a friend and to be a friend. There's a truth to the old adage that if you want to have friends, then you ought to be friendly. And I know that there are those who criticize community and church and business and club and all of that for the lack of friendliness, but the truth of it is that it takes an initiative on all of our parts in order to build those kinds of relationships. There are many, many people, probably the majority of our population, who want friends. And if we will take the initiative toward them or respond to the initiative from them, then we may well have the kind of friendship that will serve us both well as a gift from God. However, friendships can be fragile. They can be broken. They can be disrupted. And they tend to be at the major transition points of life. You may have long and cherished friendships in the community in which you live, but then because of a job transfer, you go to another community, maybe all the way across the nation or around the world. And you find that that which you almost took for granted is almost impossible to replace. The same thing happens with divorce, where once you were perceived to be part of a couple, but now you are perceived quite differently, or death. And it is not just the relationship with the person who has died, but all of the relationships seem to change. It is said that when we move to a different age of life, friendship is a different type of thing. For the young, when they make friendships, do so on something of a level playing field. Everyone is building relationships in youth. But as we grow older into middle age and into senior adulthood, we discover that then when we reach out to make friendships, that the playing field is no longer equal. For some already have their quota of friends, and it's not that they're unfriendly, but they have all of the relationships they can maintain, and it is not until one of their relationships is broken that they have the freedom to strike up a new one. Or that we have developed our own interests, our own idiosyncrasies through the years, and they're somewhat difficult to match up with other people whose developments have been quite different. Well, if this be the human side of friendship, what do we do with these realities? Well, I'll tell you what I think as Christians we ought to, and that is to bring together the divine design with the human side, all of these realities in our own personalities and in our own society, and to seek to bring them together into a restoration of the divine design in our own realities of relationships that we share with one another every day. That our Christian approach should be to grab hold of God's gift of friendship and demonstrate it in the world in which we live. Well, we're going to talk far more about this in coming weeks as we examine some of the good and bad, some of the unusual friendships that punctuate all of the scriptures that we have before us. We'll do that in the future, but let me finish with three simple suggestions. Number one, that we value God's gift, that we not put it down nor speak lightly of the gift of friendship, but count it to be something that God has genuinely and wonderfully given to us. Suggestion number two is to make friends with God, for He is the best friend of all. And once we have the best of relationships with God as our friend, that then permeates our relationships with one another. And number three, that we be faithful friends to others. Value God's gift of friendship, make friends with Him, and be faithful friends to one another. All of that really is expressed in the hymn that we are about to sing in preparation for our communion time. Hymn number 560 says, "Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love. The friendship, the fellowship of kindred minds is like to that of God above." Hymn number 560, singing all the stanzas and standing.